147 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week. Our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. We hope that tuning in for our weekly chats will help push you outside your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics, so if there's something you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. My name is Laura, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy and Elizabeth, and our special guest, Gregory Kusa. Greece is a country bursting with history. Ancient sun-bleached ruins, pierced blue skies as the Aegean laps at the endless coastline. And Greek culture is alive, with vibrant music, inspired cuisine, and thrill-seeking activities. Greeks are passionate and live life to the fullest, even at the most difficult times. The result is a country seemingly riddled with challenges, yet full of people loving life. Gregory had the chance to spend an unforgettable month in Greece this summer as part of his school's study abroad program, and has agreed to share with us his experiences and why he can't wait to return someday. So welcome, Greg.
All right, thank you so much for having me.
So why don't you spend just a second, and we didn't really talk about this, but just tell them about what you go to school for and why you were over there studying.
So I'm a student at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida. And right now I'm studying aerospace and occupational safety. That's my major. And then I'm also working on getting my pilot's license as well. So down there to
your
fly.
Commercial pilot's license.
Huh?
Right? Your commercial pilot's license,
yes.
Right?
Full pilot's license.
Yeah.
Near the end of that. So.
So is Greece a real center for flight school? I mean, that's not something we normally equate with Greece.
Not really. No.
It's just not a good excuse to go, then.
One of the reasons for the trip was we did work with one of the large airlines over there for about a week, but other than that, then Greece doesn't really have a large aviation history or influence, but just where I found myself.
Yeah, so they did a course on special topics on aviation safety, and then at the end you worked for a week with Aegean, right?
Yeah, with Aegean Airlines. Worked with their safety department for 1 week, which was a really cool experience.
Was that you teaching them or them teaching you? I mean, what was the sort of share there?
So, them teaching us and then us getting to observe as well, kind of observe how the airline works on, just a daily basis. Kind of what happens behind the scenes that, no one really sees that makes an airline work and makes, the Greek or the Athens International Airport work as well. So that was very cool.
So any tips to share or anything that we probably don't want to know?
The reason we were kind of working with Aegean is because they're regarded as one of the safest airlines in Europe. And they've also been voted, one of the best airlines in Europe for 7 or 8 years in a row now. So they're a great airline. But no, nothing that, I could tell you that would really concern you. Otherwise, I don't think they would have been showing it to us, but, could be wrong, but.
Well, that may have something to do with why they chose the trip there, is that Aegean's record and wanted
you to
see it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the reasons why they chose Aegean, is because it's regarded as a great airline with a really good safety culture. That's definitely.
Okay, So you flew from where to where?
To start the trip?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I flew from Charlotte into Athens, and that involved going through Philadelphia. So Charlotte to Philadelphia, and then Philadelphia over to Athens.
So was that American Airlines?
Yes.
With British Airways, or was it American all the way?
I think it was American all the way over there, but then on my way back, I went through London, and then it was still American Airlines, but it was technically it was scheduled as a British Airways flight.
Mm-hmm. So. That makes sense.
And then,
was this your first time in Greece? Was this like a bucket list?
Yeah, this was my first time in Greece or, any kind of Eastern European country. It was my first time in that region in general.
So you've been to France before and some of Western Europe, is that?
Yeah, France and Italy a couple of times just to visit. And then I've been to Puerto Rico and the Caribbean and Senegal and West Africa, but never really anywhere over in Eastern Europe.
So if I want to stray for just 1 second, then we'll get back to Greece, because London customs has had a reputation lately for being horrible. When you flew back through London, did you have to go through customs in London, or were you able to clear through?
I had to go through the extra screening they have there when you go from the domestic terminal into one of the international terminals. But, no, I didn't have to do customs there.
Okay.
I only had to do customs in Charlotte.
Okay.
When I came back.
Okay, great. That's good to know. Sorry to ask that,
And actually, Greg went to a, so you, on your way back, you went from Athens to where?
So on the way back, I flew from Athens, into Geneva with Aegean Airlines, and then one of my family members from France came and picked me up there and took me over to Grenoble for the wedding. And then on the way back to the U.S., I flew from Geneva to to Heathrow in London, and then direct from there to Charlotte.
Okay. Nice. Well, you had a nice little itinerary then.
It was a great trip. For sure.
Great trip and great flights, huh?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so you flew into Athens, and tell us a little bit about how the trip commenced.
So I flew into Athens the day before the trip was supposed to start, just to give myself a day to settle in and kind of rest before being on the boats for a couple weeks. So got to the airport got to Athens a day early and rented a place with a couple buddies of mine. And then we pretty much just spent the night, and early the next morning we got up, and that's when we went and met our group to start the trip.
Okay, and you can go ahead and tell more about that.
Well, and this part of the trip, the next part of the trip, was organized by the school?
Yeah, whole program was run through a company called Get Lost, but it was, you know, it was through the school.
That sounds like Sandy's kind of company.
They were great.
Yeah, they're only, I looked them up, Elizabeth. They're out of Greece.
Okay.
They only do Greece. But they do kind of these non-traditional, off-the-beaten-path.
Tell us what you did.
So, for the first night?
Nope, just...
Keep going.
But so the next day we got on the boats, and when we got on, we took all our luggage on there, and we had to get a safety briefing from the captains before we left. So we got about an hour and a half long safety briefing. And
did the boat leave out of Athens?
Yeah, it left out of the Kalamaki Marina.
Okay.
Was the name of the marina that it left out of.
Okay.
So we left there at about 8 p.m. And then we sailed down to this place called the Temple of Poseidon, which is this big temple up on a cliff. And it's at the very southernmost point on mainland Greece. It's if you look on the peninsula that Athens is on, it's at the very southern end of that. So we sailed to there, and that's where we spent the night.
Okay, you say you're sailing. Tell us a little bit about the boat and everything.
Yeah, this isn't your luxury yacht cruise, is it?
No, it was. So we had 10. It was 10 students and one captain per boat. The boat was. They were all made by a boat company called Beneteau, is how you say it, I think. And they were Cyclades 50.5 was the model of the boat. So they were about 50 feet long. They had 5 cabins. Each one could sweep up to 2 people. And then they had the captain's quarters up front. So pretty small boat, but for that many people, but it was still relatively comfortable and just pretty nice boats in general.
Was this like a working trip for you guys? Were you guys the crew too?
A little bit. We were taught how to kind of set the sails and, you know, how to help the captain out whenever we were dropping or pulling up the anchor. So we kind of became more and more of the crew as the trip went on and we learned more. But the first couple of days, we really weren't doing anything because no one really, at least on my boat, had ever sailed before. So it was very new for all of us.
Oh, wow. Did anyone get sick?
A couple people got sick on a couple of occasions, just when the seas got kind of rough, but that was to be expected.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do all your meals on the boat, Greg?
No. When we went around the islands, most of the time we would go out to eat somewhere, just because the food was pretty cheap and always really good. But a couple of times we did cook on the boat, because it just had a small little kind of kitchenette kind of deal going on, so we cooked with that a couple of times.
So I'm looking at your itinerary a little bit, and you know the islands you went to are kind of small and definitely off the path. Did you go into any? Did you get see Santorini or Mykonos or any of the big ones, or did you just totally skip those and go for these little tiny ones?
No, I mean, I think the biggest city or the most kind of touristy place we went into was the on the island of Milos.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was, yeah, really small islands with just really small dotted towns everywhere, which was definitely different from going, you know, from going to Santorini or somewhere of that sort. But I prefer it.
Yeah.
What was your favorite island?
My favorite island was definitely the island of Paros. We were stuck there, but we were there for 5 days, which was 3 days longer than we were supposed to be. But we were just there because the seas were too rough to go and the weather was acting up a little bit, so we stayed put there for a while. But what that allowed me to do is kind of go around and explore the island more than I would have in just a two-day kind of short stay there. So that was really cool as well.
So did that mean your whole itinerary altered? Did you have to skip things because you ended up there longer?
Yeah, I think we just had to make a couple of the stops at, you know, some of the next islands a bit short, you know, day shorter, just to make up for it, which they knew it was going to happen, because with sailing, you can't really have a completely set schedule, because something is always going to change.
So Greg, sometime in the near future, we're going to be doing a podcast on packing.
Okay.
So I want you to share with us how much your luggage weighed and what you had in it that might be different than what most people have in their luggage. Because this was for a month.
Yeah.
Right? And you were on a boat. Then you had to have professional clothes for working at the airlines. You had to have clothes for going to the wedding, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a lot of stuff packed. I mean, my big bag, when I checked it in at Charlotte, it weighed 50.5 pounds. It is 50.7, so I just barely made it. Small one weighed maybe 20 or 25 pounds, and then I had maybe a 20-pound backpack.
Wow. Well.
Now, did you have to leave? Yeah, did you have to? Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
I was just going to ask you, did you have to leave any of that behind when you went on the boat, or were you able to get all of that on?
What we did with the boat is that you were told to bring one big suitcase and one small one, and then once, you know, you get to Athens, you put all your stuff for the boat in the small suitcase, and then you put everything else in the big suitcase, and then the company took it, GetLost took it, and kind of kept it at their place until we got back, which was nice, because with how small the cabins were in the boat, a big suitcase definitely would not have been possible at all to fit in there.
Yeah, it's nice when they can accommodate that, for sure.
So how many days total on the boat?
It was 14 days total, 2 weeks.
In a small bag?
And what was in your small bag that other people might not have in their small bags?
I had my hammock in my small bag. I just take my hammock with me everywhere, and I ended up using it a lot, because most of the nights that I was on the boat, as long as it wasn't super windy outside or the waves weren't too big, I would hang my hammock up between the two masts and just sleep outside up on deck.
Oh, how awesome is that?
Which was pretty, yeah, because, you know, better view outside, and then in addition, on those types of sailboats, down underneath deck, it gets really hot, even at night. It'll usually be about 10 degrees warmer down there than it is up on deck, so...
So most people know that we record these a little bit ahead of time, and then, and I know you've been back for a little while. Were you there in August at all, or was this all in July?
This was all in July.
Okay. So you didn't get to see the Perseid meteor shower or anything, because that's one of the sea there is one of the best places to see that, but it's in August, so, yeah.
You see that, that's unfortunately.
That's too bad. You got to go back. Do it again.
You also had a sleeping bag, right?
Yeah, but I did not bring that on the boat with me.
Okay.
That was for the mainland.
Okay. So just in his luggage, he had a hammock and a sleeping bag.
So you had to camp, too? Or you chose to camp?
Well, we were going to... When we went up to the northern part of Greece, we were going to do this hike up to this refuge called Astraka, the Astraka Refuge. And we ended up not doing that because actually the weather got too cold up there, and it wasn't, you know, the whole refuge and the mountain we were supposed to hike up were shrouded in clouds the day we were supposed to do it. So we did a different hike instead, but the refuge was what that sleeping bag had been bought for. So I bought the sleeping bag, but I didn't actually use it at all on the trip since that got canceled.
Gotta go back.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't imagine taking a sleeping bag on a trip like that, though.
Well, then especially not using it. If you have to use it, that's one thing, but you've carried around.
My sleeping bags are huge. I mean, they're like from the 90s, from probably around the time you were
born. Yeah, this one was pretty compact, but it still took up a lot of room in my big bag. But, you know, they can squish pretty easily, so it wasn't too much problem.
Some of the newer ones can squish.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and if you're not traveling completely on a student budget, we have providers who, you know, when you do camping trips like this, they can provide that stuff so you don't have to pack it, too. So,
yeah
that's an cool. Extra thing, too.
But I thought, you know, there are some folks who may listen who may like adventure travel.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he could bring his hammock and then kind of sleep outside on the boat, I mean, that is like a for adventure junkies and for outdoor junkies, and maybe just for anyone to sleep under the stars in a hammock in the middle of, underneath the Grecian skies, that's pretty dang, you know, that's a pretty dang bucket list thing.
Yes, I would highly advise that to anyone who goes over there.
So you were on the boat for 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then what happened?
So we got back to Athens, and we docked in the Kalamaki Marina and took all our stuff off. We stayed the night in Athens, and then the next day we got on a bus really, really early. And pretty much the whole day we spent on the bus, and we drove up to Anopadina, which is a small village in the mountains that we were in.
Did you stop on the way up there?
Yeah, we stopped a couple of times just for, you know, your normal bathroom breaks and food breaks and whatnot, but we also stopped at this place called Meteora, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's basically just a bunch of old Greek Orthodox monasteries that are built up on finger rocks. So, you know, the rocks are kind of shaped like that. It's literally just a very steep kind of rock just poking out of the ground like that. And then you've got all these little monasteries on top, which is really cool.
You climb up to them, or what's the...
There are stairs now, but, you know, when they were built, the only way they could get the monks or the nuns up to these monasteries was they would have to drop, drop a basket down 400 or 500 feet, wait for the nun or the monk to get in, and then they just pulled them back up.
Wow.
Well, how did the first people get up there?
I'm honestly not sure.
Magic, Sandy, magic.
I looked at the whole time, and I never found out.
That's kind of like how they build the San Francisco Bay Bridge. You kind of don't want to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's there. It's stable. But that was really amazing to see something like that. You know, just these beautiful monasteries perched on top of, you know, pretty much nothing. Not nothing, but it's not a mountain where it's just a steady incline like that. It is a sheer drop if, you know, you go beyond the bounds of the monastery.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll test your faith, won't it?
Yeah, it will.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so you went up to, you stopped at Meteora.
Yeah. And then after that, I think it was another maybe 2.5-3 hours of a drive to Enopadena, which is a small, really, really small, kind of old, traditional Greek mountain town that we stopped in, or that was our next stop, rather. And that's where the resort of Monopatia was at. So
you said that was like a camping resort or a mountain resort?
It's a resort, but it's not like when you think of a large kind of ski resort in Western Europe or in the US or something like that. It's all these very old stone houses or stone buildings with stone roofs, and you know, everything's very old in that sense, but then they're very nicely furbished on the inside, and you know, you've got a hot shower and all those nice amenities, which was very nice after 2 weeks being on a sailboat. But
and then what sounds like an 8-hour drive. How long was this total drive?
Well, because factoring in the stops for food and then Meteora, and then also the fact that we were on a bus, so a bit slower than taking a car usually, it was about 13 hours from when we left Athens to when we got to Enopadena. It was a very long trip, but, you know, we got to stop at Meteora along the way, so.
Yeah, broke it up a little bit.
Made it more bearable.
Is Enopadena a mountainous place? What was your view like out of your resort?
The resort is, it's kind of on one of the hillsides overlooking the village. So when I walked out of my room, if I look kind of just slightly to my right, I could kind of see the rest of the valley that we were in, because we were kind of at the very start of the valley where it kind of pinches up into, you know, between two mountains or whatever. But if I look to my right, you could kind of just see the rest of the valley and see way off into the distance. And then if you look to the left, you could just see the rest of the village kind of, you know, as it's just built kind of going up the mountain. It's only about 150 people actually live there. And during the winter, when, you know, all the resorts and hotels there are closed, I think I heard from someone that the population drops down to 10. Well, it's a very, very, very small little village, but really beautiful there too. Kind of reminded me of, you know, it was the Greek equivalent of going to some really, really kind of small, traditional, cute town in the Appalachians or something. It was kind of Greece's equivalent.
Except a lot older, I imagine.
much older. Yeah. Yeah, probably hundreds of years older.
Yeah.
And you were like in Enopadena for 4 days, and you said that you were supposed to go camping, but you didn't get to.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do something else instead?
Yeah, instead of going for that big hike up to the Astraka Refuge, our guide took us on a hike in a Vikos Gorge, and which is probably about an hour and a half north of Enopadena, but it's the deepest gorge in the world by width of ratio to depth, because at one point it's almost as deep as it is wide. So it holds that record. And then, you know, so that was very cool. And what we did is we started at one small village that was on one side of the ravine and hiked down about 1,000 feet to the bottom, where there were these springs where, you know, you could literally just drink the water straight out of the ground.
Oh, wow.
As it was coming through the surface. and we stayed there for a little bit, and then we hiked back up 1,200 feet and into another village on the other side. So it was a lot of elevation change and, you know, a 5.5 mile hike, but that was also probably one of the best hikes I've ever done. Really, really beautiful there too, in the gorge.
And then you were saying, you were telling me that one of your, what was one of the highlights of being there that you and a couple of other folks decided to do towards the end of the trip?
In the mountains?
In Annapurna with the church?
Ah, yes. I think it was the second to last day we were there, a few, you know, friends of mine and other students, and also a couple of the professors, we decided to go attend a Greek Orthodox just a typical Greek Orthodox mass.
Yes,
just because we just kind of wanted to see how it was different from a mass in the, you know, a Catholic mass in the U.S. or anything of that sort. So that was also a very cool experience. We kind of just went to the church, and all around the church they usually have these seats that you can sit in instead of having rows of church pews. So we kind of just sat over next to one wall, and we were able to observe the whole thing, which was a really cool experience.
So this is probably a good time to talk to us real briefly about what you think about the Greek food.
Oh, I love the Greek food.
If you had answered any differently, I would have to just hang up on you right now.
No, it was really cool. One of the coolest things about going to several different regions of Greece is kind of seeing how the food variates from one place to another. You know, of course, in the islands, it's going to be much more focused on seafood and stuff like that. And then in the mountains, you get kind of more like meat and potatoes kind of meal, is kind of more simple and filling, but still really good. And then, of course, when you go to the cities, you get a little mix of everything and also a lot of really good street food. So that was very cool to kind of get the whole taste of that.
All the hotels you were at served you breakfast, right?
Yeah. All the hotels and the resort we were at, they all served breakfast to us in the mornings.
And what does that look like when, you know, what does a Greek breakfast look like?
It's at every place, it was pretty much just your normal, it was maybe the base, it was the basic stuff from a continental breakfast you would find in the U.S. Eggs, some type of meat, bread, you know, butter, different kinds of fruit juices, all that stuff. But then they would usually also have a big old bowl of Greek yogurt, some granola, a bunch of different jams and honeys, so you can mix those together. The Greeks also really like hard-boiled eggs in the morning. I have never eaten so many hard-boiled eggs.
It's good for you.
Was there anything that was kind of unusual?
Yeah, and then, you know, they would also have pretty much all the ingredients you would need for a Greek salad. They would have tomatoes, cucumbers, capers, onions, and olive oil right there in case you wanted your Greek salad at 9 or 10 a.m.
And who wouldn't, really? So we're running short on time. I don't want to go too far over because otherwise we can't upload the podcast. So I want to ask you, it looks like you moved on. So your main city visit, and I'm guessing this is where Aegean Airlines is headed, was in Thessaloniki. Is that correct? Or were you in Athens for that?
No, they're based in Athens.
Okay.
So Thessaloniki was just kind of a short little stopover because I guess what Getlos wanted us to see was, you know, what does a big city in Greece look like that's not Athens?
Athens,
that's
not
quite that big, yeah. You know?
And you said somewhere along the way you got to visit Aristotle?
Yeah, that was on the way from Annapurna to Thessaloniki. We got to stop at the school of Aristotle, which is, if you go there, it doesn't look that impressive. It's pretty much just a cleared out courtyard with some old stone bits scattered around, but it's where Aristotle taught Alexander the Great philosophy before he became a really, you know, a really important leader. When he taught Alexander the Great when he was only in his teens or something of that sort. So it's not visually, it's not a very spectacular place, but when you're there and you kind of think about what happened there, it's a pretty cool experience.
And then you traveled to Athens, which is where you were going to school, and you were telling me that you had to navigate your own transportation, right?
Yeah, you know, we stayed at a hotel only about a mile from the Kalamaki Marina, so we were still kind of down in that southern part of Athens, and whenever we wanted to go somewhere else, we had to either catch the tram or you know, take the subway, catch a taxi, something like that.
Was that pretty easy?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the metro and the tram are pretty easy to use as long as you kind of have an idea of where you start at to where you want to go, then it's easy. But for me at first it was kind of difficult just because some of the signs were in Greek. Of course, I can't read Greek at all.
It's all so Greek to you, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you find the Greek people welcoming, Greg?
Yeah, the Greek people were very welcoming. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things I realized or kind of recognized when I was over there is that even though they just went through this awful recession, they're still very lively and just happy people. Like, they're happy to be alive, and they just, more than any other place I've been, they're just people who want to live, kind of. They don't, you know.
That's one of the things I wanted to ask about, because I know there's been a lot of unrest in Greece, and people are kind of hesitant or think that it's going to be, you know, refugees everywhere. Did you see any kind of stuff like that? Were you in any of the spots where refugees were, or?
No, I didn't see any refugees the entire time I was there. And, you know, some of, you know, maybe some of the infrastructure isn't quite up to the standards of the United States or, you know, any other country that hasn't just gone through a massive recession, but it's not as bad as people make it seem. It's not crumbling, or it's not just trash everywhere or whatever. It's overall, it's a very nice place to be.
So still go, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we can't wrap up this podcast without mentioning two things very quickly. The first is, did you love the Greek beer?
Yes, I did.
Did you really?
Did you have a couple that you especially liked?
What were your recommendations?
I just tried a couple of the local or of the kind of national beers. One of them is called Fix, and that's kind of like the cheapest, kind of best for the masses beer that they have there. But then they have another one called Mythos, which is a bit nicer to drink, and that was the best beer I had there personally.
And you said that they served wine with every meal, or there's something a little bit different about the way they served wine.
Yeah, very popular to serve, you know, to have wine with the meals, especially down in the islands when you're having a bunch of seafood. But when I was down in the islands and in Athens as well, you could either buy your normal wine out of a bottle, or for about half the price, you could get half a liter of local wine, which was much cheaper and usually gave you, you know, kind of a better idea for, you know, what the wines of the region taste like. So it's kind of nice that you had those two options.
So did you dance more than you've ever danced before in your life?
No, I didn't.
Really?
No.
You got away with not dancing? I obviously was doing something wrong.
what did you eat more of than you've ever eaten in your life?
I had so much souvlaki when I was over there. Just pita bread, meat, french fries, tomato, onion, and tzatziki sauce. I think I had that at least 20 times. That was almost every day.
Was there anything else that you just ate and ate and ate and ate?
Well, I said hard-boiled eggs.
Yeah. I don't think that counts.
The hard-boiled eggs.
How many Greek pastries did you eat, Greg?
I couldn't keep track of that, honestly. So many. There were so many great little pastries to choose from at the bakeries there. And so, they're a bit different from what you would see in maybe France or Spain or Italy or somewhere like that. Kind of, because you had pastries, you know, we had some with meat, cheese, ham and cheese in them. So it was basically just like a Greek croque-monsieur and a pastry, pretty much. And then they also had their specialty Greek pastry, which is feta cheese and a combination of a couple other cheeses rolled up into phyllo leaves. So of course that's good. I mean, there wasn't any bad food over there.
Yeah, when we were talking about it beforehand, I said, "Greg, did you get pastries?" Oh my god!
I ate so many pastries over there.
Okay, well that's our show for the week. Thank you so much to our special guest, Gregory.
Thank you.
For joining us. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode, really. To leave comments, please visit us at OutlanderTravel.com. Then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/OutlanderPodcast. Or just search for Fly Away. And please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. On behalf of Sandy, Elizabeth, and myself, Laura, thank you so much for joining us here at Outlander Travel. And we'll see you next week. Gotta fly!